when we were sharing like these dark stories, it's happened to me like about 3 times now. Because like when I start sharing how I grew up and what I went through, everybody gets like, it gets real quiet. It gets real sad. And I'm just in the mode of talking. When I look up, people got like the puppy dog eyes. And I'm just like, I'm like, all right, fuck, let's stop talking about this. Let's go back to like
basketball.
Let's talk about something happy and stuff like that. Like I was on a I was on a production right before COVID, right before the initial lockdown happened. And I was telling them like what my father went through. And Kadeel's like, oh, you worry about him? Like, I told my father about COVID. And he was like, man, I seen all our black leaders die. And dogs been sick on me or something like that. I'm scared of a virus. I lived through all this stuff like that. And I was just telling them about like what I went through and what my father went through. And it was like, this came and started hugging me and shit. And I was like, I'm okay. Like, I'm here. I'm happy. I'm good, But like, good. So when that stuff happens, I just try to flip it real quick. Like, yo, you know, I used to play ball. And we used to do this and that. And I get a little happy.
That is that's quite a transition though. So we definitely want to hear a little bit about both. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your pro ball career and then how you transitioned into cinematography.
Okay. So I went to Winston-Salem State University, and after I graduated there, tried out for like worked out for like 2 NBA teams. It was the New Jersey Nets, out of Brooklyn Nets. And the Bobcats, and also got scouted by the Spurs. None of them wanted me. Brought me in for workouts. You know, I mean, the whole thing like, mom, quit your job. This is it. None of that happened.
They're lost.
Then, I like to think that. I really do. But unfortunately, that's not the case. That's not the case. Spurs went on to win championships, right? So, you know what I mean? So from there, talked to some agents, and my first gig was in Japan. I played for Toyota.
What year is that, sorry?
This is 2008, 2009.
And that was your first time traveling, I believe, right?
Yes.
To Japan.
Well, excuse me. No, my first time ever traveling, I went to Switzerland in Paris for a Nike tournament when I was 16.
Yeah,
16. And and like this is to give you like my family is so loving and everything like that. But just to give you an idea of like my mom wanted me gone. Cause like I left at 16. It was 2 weeks. Came one, I'm allergic to dogs, so we don't have like animals in the house. Came back, there's a dog there. My room's like been damn near packed up. Did I click something? Sorry.
Yeah, that's all good. We'll just roll
through. No, I think it's this one. My room's been damn near packed up. And she's like, oh, you're about to go to college soon. You're like, you'll be all right. Like, just go. But that was my first time out the country. That was my first time being like, there's a whole nother world out here that I want to see. So playing in Japan, playing for Toyota was just like, I played in the second league. So Toyota had a top league as well, a top league team. Where I don't know if y'all follow a lot about basketball, but Charles O'Bannon played. So the O'Bannon brothers won the national championship at UCLA. So he's older in his career. He's probably was like 3 years from retiring at that time. And they were playing against him in this big tournament around New Year's tournament. And it's like 25 to 30,000 people in the arena. And we're at the free throw line. And, oh, man, he was such a G. He was at the free throw line. And I was like, no, we're just shooting shit. I'm just like, yo, man. Why you never try to go back to the NBA, man? Like, you know, you're still hella nice and stuff like that. Why'd you stay out here your whole career? And he's like, well, because of this. And he took one step off the free throw line and raised his arms. And it was like 30,000 people. Had like these clappers.
And
it was like, oh, Bannon. And I was just looking around. And I was looking around and I was just like, yeah, I want this life, man. Like, he's like, yeah, I've been a bench player in the NBA. I wouldn't be getting this type of stuff.
I was going to ask you because, I mean, we all go through things. We work hard towards goals and different objectives in our lives. How did it feel in the moment, just like a brief overview of the feeling when you were going for these pro teams and then realized you had to redirect your life to another direction?
You talking about like from not making NBA?
I just want to like, how did you feel and how did you overcome that? Because that feels like a big part of this story.
Well, so how it works is like, I had some connections where, in my mind, I was still going to make the NBA. So I was like, yo, go overseas for a couple of years. Make some good money, bulk up some more, work on what I was lacking. Because, like, when they bring you in, they pretty much just, like, it's like a shit party. It's like, yo, you know what I mean? I was when I met the rep from the Spurs, mm-hmm. he came to a game where I had like 35 points. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I shot real good. I was like, all right, this is it. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, yo, your foot slow, your foot speed slow, and then your shot gets off a half a second too late. And it was just like a constant teardown. And I left that. I left that. You know, I was young and immature at the time. I left that meeting like, yo, fuck you.
Right,
you
know right.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm out of here. Like,
yeah.
But so my mindset was like, I got a couple years and I'm going to get the opportunity to work out again, mm-hmm. which I did. I ended up, one of my best friends who was my professional trainer, he ended up getting connected with Dan Gilbert and World Wide West. So I worked out with a lot of pro players they were trying to bring in. I don't know if y'all know who World Wide West
is.
But he's one of the most powerful men
in America. Yeah.
Shit, maybe America. Who knows? But definitely in sports. But he was just like, he was a huge asshole, man. I mean, he's a very, if you're in his circle, he'll take care of you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But like, he'll have players that I was giving them the business, but because I wasn't in the circle, it was like I wasn't getting opportunities.
Right.
So after that point, it got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to focus on making as much money as I can and playing in as many countries and seeing as much of the world as I can.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And we said, go ahead.
No, I said, that makes sense. Yeah. Makes good sense.
Yeah.
That makes me, I want to ask about another thing that you told me about regarding travel and discovering the world and the attitude that you may have had before that and how that changed it. And what was that like? What really changed after that first time you traveled?
So America brainwashed you to make you feel like the world's dangerous. And there are places in the world that are dangerous, but it's they make you think like, we're the best. Here's the best. Mm-hmm. Everyone else sucks. Everyone else is dangerous.
Right.
Don't leave here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When traveling the world, man, I made some great friends, had some great experiences. Japan is one of my favorite places I've ever been to in the world. Just the culture, the people, the food, everything was amazing there.
Have you been back?
Yeah, I was able to take my wife. Like I always talked about it. So mm-hmm. like, I was able to bring my wife back there.
Dope.
Nice. Actually, right before COVID hit, he was there like in January.
Oh, okay.
And great time, great experience. We actually want to go back when they're allowed to travel again.
But, right. Hopefully that's soon.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
But like my biggest thing was like when I got my contract to Saudi Arabia, my mom was like, yo, don't go. It's dangerous out there. You know what I mean? You know, like terrorists, thing like that. And I was like, well, my agent told me it's cool. A couple of my other boys played in other parts in the Middle East and they spoke highly of it. And I went out to Saudi and man, it was amazing. I wasn't Muslim, so I played for a team in Mecca, which is one of the most holiest cities in the world. So I had to live in the desert on the outskirts of the city.
Wow.
But my teammates were so cool and they took great care of me and they're very, very family oriented out there. Mm-hmm. They never pressured the Quran on me, but they gave me one to read. They prayed 5 times a day, which I tell you right now, that prayer call, your first week there will scare the shit out of you because it comes on at 5 a.m. in the morning. It's
oh wow.
Yeah, it's like it echoes throughout the city. And if you're not used to that, you're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
But they were just great to me out there, man. It was safe. The most dangerous part about being in Saudi was like driving. Because like they can't drive. It's like bumper cars out there. And then it's like, well, the rule changed now, but before when I was out there, women weren't allowed to drive. So you see like 8-year-old boys like barely sitting over the steering wheel to drive their mother to the grocery store
Wow.
Law abiding citizen.
I did not think of that solution.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd call that a solution.
Well,
really?
If you need milk, you know?
So that was like coming back and telling my friends and family what the world was like, that experience. And I came from not the best situation growing up in Queens and stuff like that, but like I played in Ecuador in the Amazon in this small city called Macas where it rained. Like, you know how it stormed early today?
It'd be
like that every morning until like 11 o'clock and it was so hot by 12:30, everything's dry.
Wow. You should call that place like a rainforest or something.
Yeah. Exactly, right? They should. That's a good name for it. But like people will come out because they didn't have proper plumbing and they'll wash themselves in the street in the morning.
Right.
So like watching that level of poverty, it made me realize like as bad as I thought things were, you know, I mean, I was blessed to have certain opportunities and stuff, right?
Perspective is important.
And what did your friends think of that? Other friends that have never left Queens?
They were skeptical. They was like, oh, this is amazing, D, and stuff like that. But like, oh, because whenever I was playing, I would be like, I'd be like, yo, son, I'm gonna be in this country this year. You gotta come out. You know what I mean? And my only thing was like, you have to buy the ticket there.
Right.
Yeah. But I'll buy a ticket home. You know, you have somewhere to stay. Yeah. Everything's on me. I'm gonna show you a hell of a time. We're gonna party. We're gonna do it up.
Right.
You just gotta get there. I'll give that to all my friends.
Yeah.
And over the course of my career, nobody ever came.
Oh, damn.
Because nobody, where I'm from, people don't travel like that. Yeah. Like, it's starting to happen more now because you can see more of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it took my best friend. It took him to use over 30 years to leave the hood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's like, not even like the country, just the hood.
Yeah.
Like, like, that's even crazier. Like, it's not even about flying. It's about going to another town or another city. They haven't even done that.
And that's, I had to tell him, I was like, yo, man, if you, because he's my best man at my wedding, I was like, if you don't come.
And the wedding was in Toronto?
Yeah.
Ah.
And I was like, yo, if you don't come, like, we're no longer friends. And when I see you, we're fighting. Like, on site. You know what it is. And he was, of course, he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was only in Toronto for maybe like 36 hours.
He moved.
And that was enough. That was enough.
Well, he ran out after
that. That man travels everywhere now.
Right.
He's like, yo, man, let's do a trip to Jamaica.
Oh, it was enough that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like more enough. He was like, wow, he's like, it's amazing here. I want to come back.
Yeah.
And then like, cause his wife would travel. She would travel without him.
Oh, wow.
She'll just leave him. Like, I'm going to Mexico. So now they go together. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's cool. That's cool watching that change in him and some of my other boys who've got money now and are older and then they're traveling and seeing other things of the world. So he's still, you know, at least he's leaving the hood now, but it's like, He goes to all-inclusive resorts and he doesn't leave.
Nah,
I'm like, yo, you just go to the city, man.
Well, that's somewhat traveling.
I mean, listen,
it's
man.
It's a start.
You got to start somewhere. You crawl before you walk, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm happy that he's at least leaving.
So. Where was your favorite place to play ball? Like, what was your favorite city or country?
Well, it's...
Keep in mind, they're all listening.
It's if it's strictly for basketball...
Yeah.
Canada was.
Okay.
If good it's answer. The overall experience, it was Japan.
Okay.
Japan. Why Canada then?
Yeah.
So Canada, when they started Canadian League out here, they had let's say it's the roster of 12 people. You're allowed to have up to 8 Americans.
Okay.
So it felt
what?
Like.
That's
yeah.
That's funny.
That's even in the CFL too. Yeah. Any Canadian hilarious. League, we have to make room for them. They're better.
So it was like being in college again.
Yeah.
But we're all pros.
Mm-hmm.
We're all getting paid to do this now.
Right.
And
yeah, must be nice.
Yeah. It was a cool situation, and then. We was in Moncton, New Brunswick.
Okay.
And I don't know the correct way to say this, but they've seen black people before out there.
But not a lot.
Rednecks? Is that what you're looking for?
No. They never met some real...
black people.
I don't know if I'm going to say real black people is another word I want to use for it, but we're not going to use that right
now. Yeah, I know.
But like, they've never met people like us.
Right, right.
So, you know, because like, you got my boy from like the hood in Atlanta, Compton, LA,
right?
You know what I mean, New York,
And
it was just, we just took over that town, and it was just like
slightly overwhelming for them.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
culture
was
shock.
Was it ever? They did not know what
the
TV hit them.
Came out the box.
Yeah, and they were so nice to us. Like we were. Eating at people's houses. We met so many rich people that were just like.
Was this before Get Out?
Yes. This is before. This is 2012, 11, 12.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a great experience. They were very nice to us out there.
Did you meet the Trailer Park Boys?
No. I did it. But
a lot of you are familiar with the DNA Project and have been rocking with us for a while. But some of you aren't. A lot of you are faithful listeners of the podcast, but aren't familiar with some of the other work that we do. So I just want to take a quick moment to explain to you a little bit more of what we do. So you're getting married, or you have a friend, a cousin, a sister, somebody you know is getting married. Okay. You've booked your venue, caterers, photographer, all that good stuff. When it comes to live music, most people have no idea where to look. We have you covered. Picture this. During the ceremony, while guests are being seated, or while the bride's walking down the aisle. During the cocktail hour, while guests are just mingling and having a good time. Don't forget about dinner music. That's very important to set the mood while guests eat. And we definitely can't forget the party. Let's get the party started right now with the DNA Project. www.thednaproject.ca for more information.